Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind. Your host, Eric Davis. Why the music just disappeared there. As we continue our explorations of the cultures of consciousness, I just got back from three wonderful weeks in the United Kingdom. I always enjoy visiting merry old England. This time I got into Scotland as well. Standing stones, ancient castles, Templar chapels, and lots of magical enchantments, and as well as a bunch of interesting events in the Big Smoke in London, including Breaking Convention, which was a very interesting psychedelic conference of the old school with lots of crazy characters, shamans and mystics and artists, as well as the scientists and psychologists that we increasingly see at psychedelic gatherings. So that was pretty fascinating, and we'll be bringing on some people that I met there onto the show coming up. So the gifts will keep on giving. But today we're going to talk about music. We don't do music too often here on Expanding Mind, not because we're not absolutely enamored of music. And in fact, I think that music of all the arts, including literature, film, I know they're all there's wonderful jewels in all these genres, but for me, music is always closest to the spirit, whatever we mean by that amorphous term. So pursuing mind, pursuing consciousness, expanding the horizons of the self, I can't imagine doing that without being a lover and hopefully creator of music. But it's often the case, and I say this as someone who wrote about music extensively for many years as a music journalist and critic, that in my humble experience, most musicians are not particularly articulate. Nothing to say about them as their intelligence. Obviously, they make great music, but they're not always the most engaging in conversation. So it's a rare treat when I find a musician who I feel is really interested in articulation and entering into the conversation, into the deep think around the music. And luckily today we have one such, Steve Nalepa, an old friend of mine, an electronic music producer from L.A., as well as a composer, professor, DJ, DubSpot instructor, and an Ableton Live expert. One of the things I like about Steve's career is that it's not just about making tunes and being the groovy DJ in the limelight, but it's also about building a whole world, a whole sort of culture around new technologies, spreading the word, teaching folks how to use the stuff, how to create, you know, move on and become their own creators. So he feeds the scene as well as being a scenester, so to speak. So I'll look forward to talking with Steve. But before we bring him on, welcome back our co-host here in Expanding Mind, Maja Daou. Hi, Maja.
Hi, Eric.
I know you're pretty busy these days. When is the last time you've gone out and gotten goofy at a, like, you know, at a DJ set or some crazy dance party?
Well, I admittedly don't go to a lot of DJ sets or dance parties. I like to go see live music.
Right.
Not so much on the DJ end, but the actually, I did go, it's funny you should ask, because I did go to a dance party, which was in Italy. I just recently went to Italy, primarily in Rome, totally went to the Vatican, which blew my mind, but that's like a whole in-depth other story. But we were in southern Italy in this town called Positano, and I went to this venue called Music on the Rocks, which is literally a cave. It's like carved into the side of this epic cliff on the water, like in Italy. So we were there in this cave, and it was 4th of July, and the Italians there were having an American 4th of July party. So it was kind of funny because I went to Italy to experience Italian culture, and then we got to see how the Italians view American 4th of July with this DJ that was there at this club that was in a cliff in the side of a wall. So it was really a pretty enjoyable experience, I have to say.
Well, that's one of the good things about that stuff is it can travel. But, of course, it must be said that electronic music also can be live. In fact, really good shows that I've seen that stick in my head. I mean, I've enjoyed some great DJ sets, but I have really enjoyed some live sets where things were in motion, and I know that's part of what Steve is interested in as well. So with that, I knew you'd come up with some good nugget. I just knew it. You know, you always have some good tale. You know, and I have a guy with a rock, and he's Italy, 4th of July. Why is it American? You know, it's great stuff. So, but with that, let's bring Steve onto the show. Steve, thanks for joining us on Expanding Mind.
Hey, hi, you guys. Thanks for having me. Honored to be here.
Yeah, it's a guy we haven't spoken for years.
Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice. Yeah. I'm Masha. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Good stuff. So let's see where to start. Well, first, I mean, I want to talk more about your own history and how you got into stuff in a bit, but just to kind of put a bigger picture. I'd love to just give you, almost like you were, you know, as much a commentator or a journalist as a producer and creator, just a little bit a sense of your own impression of where electronic dance music is, or electronic music more generally, now. I mean, you've been making it for a long time. You know, we've been tracking it for years. I started writing about it in the early 90s. But it's a constantly moving target, and I know there's been a lot of stuff going on the last couple of years. And so I'm kind of curious from where you sit as both a producer and a DJ, but also someone who's teaching these technologies and really trying to create, you know, the younger generations of music makers. How do you see the whole scene right now?
Well, it's really, I mean, it's thriving right now more than ever, I think, because of the bigger events, these sort of EDM-style electronic music has gotten very popular with the larger type event, festival, rave situation. But the bigger thing I think that's been happening lately as a trend over the last 10 years or so is the access to the tools and technologies that these young producers have now, where before you needed someone with an expensive studio, or you needed a label to support you to finance going in and getting some recording time. Whereas now, if you have a laptop computer and you have the software, you can pretty much do everything wherever you are in the world. And so what we see is situations like these younger producers who, you know, for example, I had a student that I started working with when he was 11. And basically, when I came in to start working with him, he had already watched, you know, pretty much every tutorial video that existed on the web. And there's hundreds of these YouTube tutorials that people are making out there that, you know, if you're self-motivated, you can get out there and pretty much learn everything you need to know about how to produce and make professional quality sounding music. And so here's a kid at 11 years old making really heavy dubstep music a couple of years ago that, you know, stood up against, you know, some of the bigger artists in the genre, namely because he got really curious, he heard some music he liked, and then it started him down that trail of discovery where, you know, he went to Beatport and he listened to some music, and then he discovered new artists, and then he's like, oh, I never knew this existed, and he wanted to make it. But then the big leap that he made there was he started searching for it. And, you know, we come from an era when we didn't have all this information always at our fingertips. I remember, you know, back in the day when you wanted to find a new artist or look something up. But now it's as simple as doing a search online, and you have everything at your fingertips. It's really changed how you teach as well now. I know when I was in the teaching at Chapman, you give an example, boom, you just Google it. You can pull up, you know, you start talking about Herbie Hancock, Rocket, and produced by Bill Laswell, and then next thing you know, you can show them the video with it, Dancing Mannequins. And it's like, you know, we didn't have that 20 years ago. You had to, like, order a video and, you know, order a magazine or, you know, things like that. But, you know, just access to information and the ability to share your music in platforms like SoundCloud and whatnot is enabling people to kind of break through that barrier where, you know, you win a remix contest at 17 years old, and then a year later, you know, the Porter Robinson situation, like he's out touring with Tiesto playing for, you know, tens of thousands of kids every night of the week. So it's, you know, it's exciting. There's, you know, obviously more people are creating stuff. So it's now about having like a good, reliable filter to help
yeah.
you find the good stuff to weed through all the crap that's out there. But, you know, it actually leads to this thing where people can be inspired, and there's this hope that, like, hey, I might get through and break through. So,
well, that's one of the things that interests me. I mean, there's a couple things in what you just said that really intrigue me, and I think give us a good. I mean, one of the things I've always liked about electronic music is that understanding how it works and looking at how it's changing and how people get found and how people create is a really good way of getting a more general sense of how we're engaging with digital technology and like how technology can create new environments, new ways of learning, et cetera, but because it's fun, you're listening to music, you get it's like you get an emotional, impactful sense of this stuff as well as just tracking the technology. And so a couple, you know, responses to what you said. One is just like this 11-year-old kid, like just the ability of, you know, kids to get obsessed with something and have all the time in their world and all the support, because, you know, usually parents are like, they're great, they're obsessed, they're, you know, they're entertaining themselves and, you know, they're learning, you know, so they're like researching, they're figuring stuff out, you know, and just how quickly and how intensively informed kids can be. And I mean, that's got to be changing. You know, it's not just that younger people are able to make good music and occasionally get picked up and have their lives changed by, you know, becoming well-known when they're still teenagers, but even just the way in which the music gets made, why it gets made, or where the sense of you know, quality is coming from. You know, it's I just think it's a really interesting dimension. I mean, you must have just in the teaching years you've been teaching sort of gotten a sense of the shift as younger people get into stuff and are able to do it more and more. How do you think that changes the music, or how do you think that what's the difference that's made by the ability for younger people to be able to really creatively engage this stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I first started teaching, I taught at Chapman University for 5 years. You know, they had a music conservatory there. And I remember when I first started teaching there, you know, I'd ask my class, because my friends in the Glitch Mob had done a remix of one of my songs. And so there's this great video of an interview with Edit from the Glitch Mob talking about the process of making an album. And, you know, this idea of you write one song and, you know, that's a song where you're like, you know what, this kind of vibe, this style, I can see myself making an entire body of work kind of like this song. And it's an incredible, you know, it's incredible video. It's from craft.tv. It's basically, I always would show this to my students before I gave them their first composition assignment, because I think you really nailed the process of, you know, tuning in and coming from a, you know, a unique personal emotional place and pouring that into your music and writing your music and then writing a whole body of work and making an album and whatnot. And I just remember when I first started, no one really knew who the Glitch Mob were. They had just started coming out, and, you know, and it was funny, like, over the years, over the course of the 5 years that I taught there, you know, every year I would show this, and, like, by the second or third year, they had grown to a point where everybody in the class had known about it. And it was, you know, it was really interesting how this shift happened where, you know, these artists that were, you know, at one point more obscure electronic artists, it sort of shifted and became more popular. And, you know, it's just kind of been really building and building lately. And, you know, it's fun. I think that's the most important thing. It's almost like for these younger kids, when they get into it, instead of playing video games, you know, playing stuff with the music software is almost the same thing, except at the end of the day, you're actually creating something. And I think that's why a lot of the parents of these younger kids are, you know, actually being very encouraging, because they see them like building a skill and working on something, and, you know, potentially, hey, you put your album out, it might be something to put together for your portfolio for going to college. I mean, I have these discussions with parents all the time, and, you know, they're just happy to have these their children like in a direction where they're passionate about something and they're, you know, eager to learn and devouring knowledge. And, you know, I try to encourage that by really filling in the history, you know, because you get, there's two types of the young people today. There's the ones who only know, like, the most recent stuff, and they only go back a few things, and they really don't care. You get these, like, funny arguments that pop up about, you know, an artist samples an artist from, you know, an older generation, and nobody knows, like, who that artist is, even though it's someone as big as, like, say, Portishead, you know? Like, there's a new song out by The Weeknd that has a sample from Portishead, and I'm sure most of his young fans probably don't know who that band is. And it's, you know, it's interesting how it divides along the lines. But then you get the other ones, like the real seekers, who they just know everything. And they know more than, you know, they can end up knowing more than you, because they have, like you said, a lot of time on their hands. And there's so much out there in terms of the resources now that if you really get motivated, you can just, you know, become like a self-taught PhD student on the history of music just by Googling around and, you know, going on this quest. So,
well, here's the thing, that whenever I see that happen in all different fields, especially with younger people, there's this weird two-edged sword, where on the one hand, it's just, you know, it blows my mind that you can access the degree of information, not just the information, just the experiences, the recordings. You know, you're 13 years old when I first started buying records. You know, you for whatever reason, you get into, you know, I don't know, whatever, early 70s funk. But now you can just go online and boom, you see the clips, you see, you know, you get much more data than I got when I was started to get into this stuff, and it was obscure, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, if you have passion, if you're really driven, you can sort of absorb this material much more quickly and, you know, be able to pursue your and get your passion to feed back and get really focused on the stuff. But right next door to that, there's this other sense where, like, all the knowledge is so easy to access. You can do this and da-da-da, you can get that. That it almost produces a kind of, not jadedness, but it just a sort of, like, there seems to be, like, a lack of a passion often. And so the question I have for you is, like, what is it that makes a kid who gets obsessed and starts learning the stuff and starts researching it and start, what makes them not just sort of repeat what they're getting, but make something new? Where does the newness come from? Is it technical skill, or is it crazy personality, or is it happenstance? What makes something new happen when all that information is available to kind of?
Well, that's a great question. You know, because a lot of the complaints you hear about the younger generation is like, oh, there's this, you know, the jaded, or there's a sense of entitlement, and that probably comes from, you know, growing up and having everything so easily readily available when their parents had to work so much harder to find all the information. It's like it takes 2 seconds to look something up now, whereas before you had to, like, you know, you really had to work at. So we're seeing this sort of, you know, quickening, this, things are getting faster. But that shift in terms of, you know, it really has to do with, I think it goes down to, like, a deeper, like, more metaphysical thing, where the people that are really doing the work on, like, getting to know themselves and be, you know, that deeper work of, you know, they're cool to who they are, and they want to learn more, and they just, you know, you can't, there's certain things you can teach and there's certain things you can't teach. And, you know, you can teach people the you know, the hows of how to, you know, you do this to make a track. This is how you need to EQ your bass, and this is how you need to do these things to make it sound good, blah, blah, blah. But you can't teach them that motivation, that drive, that urge to just, like, I want to make stuff. It's like, you know, you can teach someone how to paint, but you can't teach them how to do nothing else but paint all day because they want to become a better painter, you know, so.
But specifically with this stuff, because it's very technical, you know, it's you're sitting there, you have a lot of different processors and processes that you're understanding, mm-hmm. you're putting files in different places, you're tweaking the sound, you're changing the, you know, you're doing things that are like production, things that are like synthesis, things, you know, there's a lot of complexity in these environments. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost more like, is what makes something new, fresh, almost like a break the rules attitude of just like almost not knowing how it works and just making something happen, or does it seem to come more and more from really being technically adept? You know, where's that balance on like technical knowledge and facility versus that spontaneous, random, even kind of naive gesture that doesn't really know what it's doing?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great point, because in the courses that I designed and teach with DubSpot now, and really continuation of what I was doing at Chapman University, basically my biggest thing is about them finding their own signature sound, because the reality is you can show everyone a bunch of techniques and the tools and show them how to, you know, make this synthesizer sound and that sound or whatever. And at first, you know, most people's music, when they start producing, is going to sound somewhat derivative. Like, oh, I really like this track by this artist, and so I want to make something that sounds like that. And you get into this, you know, stage as a producer where, you know, you're just trying to, you know, learn the tools while kind of imitating your favorite works. And that's a pretty natural thing. But, one of the exercises I would always recommend to my students when they would start, you know, working, or when someone's like, oh, I have writer's block right now, I'm just not feeling very inspired, I can't do it. I say, okay, here was my exercise for breaking through your writer's block. I'm like, close your eyes, take a deep breath, pick an age in your life, okay? Like, go back to when you were in third grade. Start going through your mental Rolodex. Think about every person you've ever met and start sending out a little mental, like, thank you, like, thank them for the lessons you learned, for the experience you shared, and like just kind of go through your entire life of thinking about everyone, just freeform it, that you've ever met and all those experiences that you guys had together. Because if you can tune in like that and get to a place where you're realizing your own unique point of view, and then you start the writing creative process coming from that place, I feel like no matter what you make, if it's derivative or not, there's going to be some emotional truth in there. And, like, that, to me, I think is the most important thing. And, you know, you're eventually going to discover what kind of sound you want to make. You know, it's a lot of times it's trial and error, and you end up doing something that's what you're not supposed to do, but it sounds cool, and you're like, oh, that's that thing, boom. And that, you throw that in your toolkit, and that becomes part of your signature sound. So it's just the process, and it keeps getting refined, you know, and it's just like anything with painters and stuff. If you start coming up with, you know, a style that people get into, you know, you have the pressure from, you know, the gallerist to keep making that kind of work because that's what sells, or, you know, and then an artist changes direction and the old fans don't like the new work, and, you know, but you got to be true to who you are and what you are into. You know, first and foremost, like, you got to make music that you would want to listen to and you're inspired by. And, you know, I don't know if there's like a definitive answer as much as there is. It's a process, and you have that aha moment where it kind of clicks together for you and you're like, ah, this is a sound that I want to explore. And I'm going to, you know, and it comes really quickly when you get that, when the muse finally shows up. And you get inspired, you've got to, like, ride that out. You have to just honor it and write as much as you possibly can during that time because, you know, sometimes you sit down and it's just not so easy. But, you know, big part of it is just showing up every day and putting in work and being open to it and really having the confidence in yourself. I think that's the biggest thing that you see with the people who are out there being, you know, successful artists today. They're confident in their choices, and they make choices, and, you know, your art is the sum of all the choices you make. It's like, okay, what kind of kick drum sound am I going to use? What key am I going to write this song in? Is it going to have
focus? Well, it's interesting. It's really interesting, that component of it, because, I mean, with electronic music particularly, not like all music is, you know, free from this, but with electronic music, there is this thing where it's almost like an algorithm where you can make randomized choices, even in putting the stuff together. But then there's that difference between, and then you get into the whole, like, consciousness kind of thing. Like, when someone does actually try to emulate a feeling or, you know, something personal, like when an individual will go to their personal selves and try and develop some kind of sound that is reflective of some feeling they got, or, and especially with electronic music, because then it gets really trancy and it can be really good at purveying those kind of atmospheres. But then there's also the other side, which of course is in pop music, where they just kind of throw together a recipe for music and try to get the kick drum based on some other kind of thing and not a personal kind of choice or feeling. And what do you think, though? Do you feel, I know, in your teaching and in music that you've produced, can you tell the difference between, say, a computer-generated song and a song that someone has, purposefully, consciously chosen?
Well, I don't, I'm not sure if there is such a thing as, the computer-generated song, because even when you're working in, on the laptop, if you make everything inside the box, as they say, and it's all done on the software, you still are making the choices. I mean, yes, you can get something you can set up a random series of processes, Brian Eno's got the, his thing with the millions of paintings and the, generative soundtrack, and that can be really beautiful. But, I break it down into there's, three stages in making the music. This one is, the writing stage, the creative brainstorm stage, and that's where you just plug in your gear, you record stuff, you experiment, you write melodies and chord progressions or lyrics, you figure out, just don't hold back, just explore the ideas as they come and capture them down. Then this next stage is the arrangement stage, and this is the storytelling stage. This is where, you get your formula out. If you kind of, there's nothing wrong with having a formula or, a meat grinder developed, as it were, if you can feed good stuff into that and you have that works, you can take someone on that journey if you're going down and making some really trippy electronic music track. But it's understanding, how do you do that? And then the final stage is, sort of the mixing stage, where you just really clean it up and make sure it sounds professional and good and it's going to work on a big system and you don't have phasing on your bass and all these other little details. But, the big part is that arrangement storytelling stage, where that's where you look at the arc of the ebb and flow of it and how that's going to impact the listener and, where it's going to take them.
I mean, another way of thinking about that question, between the sort of human and the made-by-machine thing, or is the difference between, making music by rote or by rule, the way that some pop songs are made, where you're just making a slight variation in a very established genre, which can still create a delicious track, but it's very, very kind of concocted beforehand. And then you have this idea of just the free creator who's making their own vision, et cetera, but there's something in between that I think a lot of this music is coming out of, which is just a new kind of relationship with the instrument, which is no longer simply an instrument, but, a whole technological, multidimensional apparatus where it has instruments like drums and keyboards and things that produce sound in a variety of, characters of sound, but also a whole system for engineering and setting loops going, and it's just this whole technological environment, and the kind of creativity happens at the conjunction of these technical possibilities and an individual, usually, or a couple people who are just sort of probing these possibilities. I mean, there's something very cyborg about this music, not in a science fictional way, but just in the sense that part of where it's almost hard to say where the creativity is happening. And the way I would, kind of focus this comment or question is just for you is to talk a little bit about, Ableton, which has been a very empowering tool for a lot of people in creating a wider range of interactions between human decision and machine processes. And, you know, just because some people don't know about it or it's something that you're also very passionate about, I'd love to hear you just give a little riff on what is particular about that environment as a component of creative music making.
Sure. So, How I Became a Cyborg by Steve Malevsky. So, basically, you know, years ago, I was using, you'll like this story, I was working on a, he's using a software called Acid. And it was like a PC-based software. And at the time, I couldn't find Reason 2 out there anywhere. And I sent my girlfriend at the time in to go and see if she could get an artist endorsement sponsorship because she was playing with all these big famous musicians. Like, oh, you know, maybe you can tell them all the people that you played with and see if you can come home with a copy of Reason. And so, you know, when she came back, it was not only is she a Reason, but she had this new software, which was called Ableton Live. And they described it as it's like acid on acid. And I was like, oh, hey, I'm down to check that out. That sounds pretty interesting. So, you know, I dove in and I had, you know, when she went in there and talked to the head of tech support, told him that, you know, I was like, it was computers and blah, blah, blah. I actually got called in and did an interview. Which was pretty funny because I actually bonded with him. You know, Calvin Banks was the head of tech support, and he's responsible for, you know, hiring a whole bunch of really talented artists like No Such Thing, Blue Tech, RD. There's a bunch of artists that have come through the ranks of M Audio tech support over the years. And, you know, at the time, you know, actually Calvin and I bought it because I used to work as a paranormal news researcher for a show called Strange Universe, and he found that out, and he was all, you know, I gave him copies of my books, and when I was an art book publisher, and he was just super down because he had no one he could really talk to about his childhood UFO experience that, you know, he had, and, you know, he was just really excited to talk to me about the Face on Mars Hoagland guy that he lived in the commune in Hawaii with, all this crazy stuff. I was like, dude, yeah, we were riffing, and so, you know, I ended up getting the job. He also played Everybody Loves the Sunshine with Roy Ayers on Soul Train when he was 17 years old. Like, he was touring with, you know, Roy Ayers and Stevie Wonder. I'm like, this is my boss. This is, like, the greatest job ever. So, you know, I came in and had really enjoyed working with this software and, you know, kind of became the expert because they had literally, M Audio just started working with this Berlin-based company, Ableton, distributing it, and so, you know, having a background as a teacher and whatnot, I was able to step in and started working with a lot of the endorsed artists that were coming in and wanting to learn about this, because it was different than the other software that was out there at the time, like the Pro Tools and Logic and these other programs that were more timeline-based, linear, and Ableton's big thing was it has a thing called the Session View, which allows you to do more of a real-time thing. So, in a way, it has this incredible, like, creative flow that's much more akin to, you know, improvisation in, you know, like, more traditional, you know, music playing. So you can really get into some stuff with the software, and there's a flow that you can get that I don't find really with any of the other programs. And, you know, it's just evolved over the years. It's become, you know, originally it was written as mainly geared towards live performance, and, you know, now some of the work I do is going on the road with artists, you know, supporting them, helping, you know, basically being in the band and running, you know, the computer setup for the stuff that's not actually being played by the musicians. And, you know, that's a whole other, you know, industry that has grown out of, you know, with the software, because it's really ideal for that. But it's also incredible for, you know, the composition stage where, you know, you get into this flow that you can't get in really in the other programs, and people are working very quickly and making, you know, just a lot of incredible music with it. So it's been, for me, you know, all these years being, you know, in on the early side of it and working with it, I've really met a lot of incredible people. You know, it's like I'm in the studio with someone, I'm like, dude, you've, like, worked with Michael Jackson, Madonna. Like, I'm, you know... But, you know, I know this software really well, and I can teach that, but, you know, this is a two-way street where I'm trying to pick their brains on this other stuff. So that software has really made it so that you can kind of dive in and really get going quickly. But, you know, they're all the software programs out there pretty much do more or less the same thing. It's all slightly different. You know, they all have a different way of doing it. And the thing with Ableton, you can do pretty much anything. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's like you have these infinite possibilities. Like, you can do just about anything. And I think for a lot of young producers and new producers coming at it, it's a little overwhelming. Like, where do you start? And I think it all becomes about limiting your choices and just picking something and doing it well.
I want to pick up on that in a second, but we got to take a break now. But that whole point about limiting as a aspect of creativity is cool. So, but we'll be right back. We're talking with Steve Nalepa on Expanding Mind with Eric Davis and Maja Daou. And listen to this, and then keep listening to us.
Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Maja Daou here with my co-host Eric Davis, and we are speaking with Steve Nalepa about all things musical. And before the break, you were mentioning a little bit about discernment and kind of making certain choices when making the music. And you had mentioned earlier in the conversation, too, just about, you know, along with the more access to information, more access to all these techniques and programs and things, along with that, even though it's easier to get a hold of stuff, there's just a lot of stuff. So on the plus side, we're able to make those choices ourselves instead of, like, getting fed by someone, you know, kind of what to choose or what's good or what we can use. But then on the other side, we are put in a position where you have to have something helping you make the discernment. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about maybe, like, what, if you know, like, what drives some of your choices? Does it just intuitive, or do you have, like, philosophies behind it? Do you try to follow a system, or you just kind of flow with it?
Well, you know, obviously it's got to resonate with me. You know, you listen to something, and, you know, emotionally, if I'm feeling something, that is obviously the biggest thing, I think. But there's different types of music for different types of situations. Like, there's tracks you could play in a club that will absolutely kill it when people want really heavy, intense. That's not necessarily something you would play when you're chilling having a dinner party. So there's different types of music for different types of situations, of course. But, you know, I have a few trusted places that I go on the web to find out where, you know, new music and what people are recommending. You know, I think that's been the biggest thing in this kind of new media universe that we live in, is this, like, filters, like these content filters. And,
right.
And that's, you know, it really now is about knowing where to look and to find the new, and, having trusted people around you. You know, I remember ages ago reading the Napoleon Hill Think and Grow Rich book, and the whole story about, you know, Ford being, you know, argued that he's not competent because he doesn't know something about history. And he's like, you know, look, I got buttons in my desk. I push it. I got the guy from the factory. He'll tell you anything you need to know. Boom, I push this one. I got my accountant in my office. And so, you know, you don't have to know everything yourself, but you have to know where to look or who to go to. And, you know, that just comes through experimentation and, you know, digging around a little bit. And you just have to be motivated on your own to, you know. And like I said before, you can't necessarily teach that motivation. Someone could have all the talent in the world, but if they're not ready to, like, step up and answer the call and, like, go out and do it, you know, you can't push them. It's the whole lead a horse to water and not make it drink thing. So, you know, which is interesting for me, because I have some really talented former students who, you know, I have a bunch of them that are killing it right now and doing huge things, but then there's a bunch more that are equally as talented. They just haven't pursued it full on like some of the other guys have, and guys and girls, I should say. And, you know, it's interesting how that, I mean, that happens everywhere. So I'm not really sure why that is, but, you know, it's always interesting to me when I come across someone who's incredibly talented, but then they don't feel like motivated to share that with the world, or they want to do something else, you know. And it, you know, I respect their choices, but at the same time, like, dude, come on, you're like the, you're one of the most amazing songwriters I've ever met. Like, why are you not making more music all the time? So,
but it sounds like to me that's like one of the roles that you find yourself in is just again, not just being a creator, but as someone who's sort of supporting the the creativity of the people you're coming in contact with. I mean, that's what's the things that seems different about electronic music, and at least the way that we're talking about it here is just that it's so collective in many ways, because people are sharing tips, everyone's using the same the same set of software things, and people are absorbed in listening to what's new and following. It's like this whole rich scene, and Eno had this great term where he talked about, like, in the old days it was about genius, the individual was coming up with their brilliant creative intervention, and now it's about scenius, was his word. It's that the scene itself, the networks between people, the networks between people and machines, the way in which the media circulates the tracks, and that it goes through filters, that the whole thing is kind of brilliant.
Yeah,
or the whole thing is where the creativity is happening. And so networking and filters and all those things are really like part of the experience in a way that I think is different than in the past.
Absolutely. And that was a big thing that I would make a point of in my classes when I was teaching. The first day of class every time was like, okay, everyone introduce yourselves, tell a little bit about what kind of stuff you're into, and then I throughout I would say, look, you guys need to crew up, make friends with these guys. Like, look, if you want to get into music scoring, go over and meet people from the film school. Because guess what? If you guys all keep working at it in a couple of years, these same directors might be working on a big major motion picture, and they're going to remember that you offered to score their student film for something. I mean, I've had a group of really talented students that I was honored to work with, and, in my heart I knew that if these guys stick with it, guys and girls, if they stick with it and don't, like, cop out and take some BS job that they can't stand, that sucks their soul right out of their body, if they stay doing music in a couple of years, they are going to be making a living and killing it doing music. And so I've done everything I can to encourage that, and all, always looking for ways to, like, hook them up. I'm like, look, if you guys need anything, just let me know. If you're ever looking for work with money, like, I'll help you find gigs. And so I've been sort of, for years it was, my advanced tech. My class was called, I taught a class called Music Technology. There was an intro and an advanced. And in the advanced class, what we did is every week they would make a track. And at the halfway point of the semester, we'd look at their body of work, pick their best four songs, and then they would take them to the finish line and take everything they've learned all along and make those four songs as great as they can be. And the final project was a record release party where everyone would play 15 minutes live their new EP of four songs that they made. They had to do the album art. They wrote their bio. They had the photo. They made the MySpace page. Back in the era when your top eight friends mattered, it's like definitely dating myself here. But, it was awesome because at the beginning of the semester, I told them all, like, look, if you guys do this and you stick together and you have a really nice, attention to design and aesthetic and you do it well, like, the tools are out there where people can find out about you. And for me, it was so amazing. We had guests like No Such Thing and Beretta from the Glitch Mob during that semester. And they both, got out of the class after hearing some of these guys' music and, hit up Marianne Hobbs, who is a BBC radio show. I mean, for a while there, she was hosting the show where she was responsible for discovering all these amazing artists. And, her show actually coincided with my office hours, which was right before class. So I would go and it would be bumping her music loud, and then it went into the first hour of the class as well, and we continue listening just because I was also kind of listening to see if she was going to play my music on the show a little bit, but I also was promoting it as, like, this is where you hear the freshest new electronic music. And on the last day of class, instead of having a final exam, we kind of went over how the concert went the Saturday before, and it was amazing. It was like a 6 hour, 22 students each doing 15 minute sets. It was like a 5.5 hour, Coachella situation here where, they had to write, they went through every step that you would do this as a musician. They had to write a tech writer and let me know what kind of equipment they needed, if they needed anything, and then perform their music live with visuals and dancers or whatever they wanted to do. And it was an incredible experience. And there we are sitting in the classroom on the very last day going over everything, listening to Marianne Hobbs, and she played three of their songs on her radio show. That she hit them up on their MySpace pages that they made, asking them to send her music, because she's like, I heard about you guys, and I like this, send me. And for me, it was such a full circle thing where, you can really do this. It's such a DIY situation now. Boom, that led to EEPROM hearing Virtual Boys music and offering to master their EP for free. And, then because EEPROM was involved, he's playing their music and,
That's an amazing it's a different mode of circulation, and it's overwhelming in some cases. Like you say, there's just so much material, there's so many producers just in all fields. But that does make it kind of a little bit more unpredictable, and things can move really quickly too, mm-hmm. because it's more turbulent. It's like mm-hmm. suddenly someone can leapfrog from obscurity to quite a high degree of visibility with the right, luck and kind of dynamics. But since you mentioned your track, and we did get some tracks set up beforehand, I thought we'd play the first of the two tracks or portions of the tunes that you sent us. Maybe just play them now, and then you could talk about them a bit. So do you want to introduce?
Sure. Well, I sent you two little snippets from my last EP, this track called Dayton. Got a little bit of the beginning of it and a little bit of the end of it. So as we were talked about earlier, I really like exploring this idea of, the music really taking you places. And over the course of the 5-6 minutes, it definitely evolves a lot. So this is, there's a great video to the song Dayton that my friends Benton Bainbridge and Owen Bush did together with the Rut Etcher video synthesizer, this crazy analog video synthesizer from the 70s where you turn physical knobs and dials and it makes all kinds of crazy stuff. But,
Let's hear it. So this is Dayton. That does that made me feel really relaxed.
Yeah.
And I was having a good time. I was like, yeah, well, I'm not doing a show. I'm just about to just kick back here, the sun setting.
Expand your mind.
So here's a question.
Just about to go into a really heavy section, and then at the end, the other clip that I gave you, it kind of mellows out into some, sort of ambient piano outro. So, you don't really see it coming, and then boom, all of a sudden you're in it. So. Yeah, it was good. That was the first release on Team Supreme Records. I basically, it went from hosting these barbecue beat invitations with my former students, really trying to keep in touch with everybody after I stopped being their teacher, and would have them over. We'd grill a bunch of food, get a keg of beer or something, watch the sunset. Basically, then they would all take turns playing show and tell, playing their latest tracks. And so this was my way of, keeping up with all these guys. And then one night, two of them were roommates, and they were kind of bored one night, and they started this idea where they took a Notorious B.I.G. sample, My Team Supreme Stay Clean, and they gave themselves an hour, and they're like, okay, make a song at 75 BPMs in an hour using this sample, go. And they went in their rooms, they came back and played this stuff for each other, and were really impressed with what they did. And so they're like, hey, let's reach out to the whole crew. And so then they got a bunch of us did the same rules, and we started now 66 weeks later. We've been doing this every week where a different producer picks two samples and makes the rules, and everyone has to make a beat at that BPM, and, you know, you have a transition sample, so we stitch the whole thing together and offer it up as a free mixtape. You know, we've been doing live shows now for over a year every month with the whole crew. There's 17 artists and all these different collaborations. And the thing that I love about it is it started off as a game. It was fun. There were just some simple rules. Be creative. You make a minute-long beat, like anyone can do that in the course of a week. And, you know, it's been amazing for me watching everyone's skills just kind of grow from doing this exercise over and over again. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like you were talking about, you know, networking in a collective, and now we have this really strong team. We just played a show at the Echo a couple days ago, and it was sold out and it was oversold even. They sold more tickets, and it was like, you know, when we started, there was like, you know, because there's so many in our crew, we actually had more people that were actually performing than were actually at the show. But then now it's gotten to this point where, you know, one of the guys is producing with Diplo. He couldn't make the show because he was over in the studio with the Clash, you know, and Diplo, you know, oh, no big deal. I'm just playing piano with Nick Jones, you know. But, yeah, pretty exciting. So we started putting out releases as well, and this EP is the first release on Team Supreme. We've got five now, and we've got a bunch more in the pipeline, so...
when you look towards the future, do you see yourself more like as much, you know, it sounds like as much, it's as much about teaching as it is about making music, and how do you see this like evolving?
Always, you know, teaching has always been something I've felt inclined to do. Since I graduated from Yale, I moved out here. I started teaching high school math and science around town, and you know, I ended up, you know, after working as a paranormal news researcher, it gave me a lot of good stuff to talk about. When we started our art book publishing company, I met Paul Lassily, and Paul is an amazing artist who, if you guys haven't had him on the show yet, I know he would be great. And that's actually, Eric, where we met. I was introducing him at that Man Transforms Utopian conference many years ago in 2001, and you gave that mind-blowing lecture, cutting through reality like nobody else I've ever heard. And, you know, Paul said to me once about being a fully realized artist, it's important to both create things and to go out and take things in. And it's important to both read and write, because the writing part helps you synthesize your ideas together. And he says it's important to be a student and a teacher, because the teaching part, you learn so much more as a teacher, because in order to actually be able to explain things properly, you have to have a really good grasp on the material yourself. So... that really resonated with me, as did, you know, a comment at the, I also went to Yale, played football there, and at the senior banquet, the captain of the team was talking about these little old 80-year-old guys that would always come to our practices and hang out, and, you know, they told him, like, you know, when you get to be our age, it's not about the money, it's not about the material things, it's about the stories, it's about the people you meet and the adventures you share, and you should really go out to live your life, you know, for these stories. And I think, you know, that's really been a thing that's really driven me, you know, throughout my choices of, you know, how I'm navigating. But I'm always... Oh, I love teaching. I really, you know, there's that moment when you see the light bulb go on. It's an exciting feeling. And, you know, I will always definitely be active doing both creating and, you know, mentoring, encouraging people.
Well, that's like you say, it's another dimension of creativity itself. I mean, I know that's like part of when I, you know, give talks and teach. And it's sort of not different than... even the most creative writing that I do. It's sort of like all woven together, and it's refreshing to hear you say that too, because, like, just, you know, music, like everything, there's also like a lot of egos, and, you know, people are like super ambitious and they're kind of stepping on folk and they want to get big, but there's another side to things that is more collective and collaborative, and we didn't really talk too much about the collaborative dimension of this music or your own career, where you're working with all these different people, you're working with video artists, you're working with, you know, and there's all this opportunity for connections between dancers and visual producers and the music. So it's asking for a kind of collaborative spirit. And at its best, I think the electronic music scene. For me, it's as much as the music itself is fun or enjoyable or good to dance to, it's like the scene itself sometimes holds out real positive model for how we become, you know, cyborg people trying to, like, keep the spirit alive and not just have lame jobs, you know? I mean, it's really...
Oh, absolutely. You know, and tools like SoundCloud, for example, it's where everyone posts up their music and listens to it. That's enabling all kinds of collaborations. That, you know, the 11-year-old I told you about, he's 13 now, and apparently he's grown a foot since I've seen him. He's basically, you know, he was collaborating with a producer in Iceland that he met, and they were making tracks together. You know, people are young kids that are, you know, online meeting these people who are also young and passionate, and they're just trading files back and forth online over the internet and making music together. And it's like, it's this whole other reality that we have now that was not possible, you know, just a few years ago. So it's really exciting to see, you know, what's going to come out of that whole, you know, world of collaboration. Because
exactly, you know, I hope it makes for a more collaborative world. But we got to wrap up here. I just want to give you, your website, stevenalepa.com. People can find out stuff. Anything else that's coming up that you want to let people know about?
Well, I've got a microdiscectomy coming up next week, so that ought to be pretty exciting. It's been on my pre-microdiscectomy tour this week. but, yes, I would just say practice proper posture when you're working on those laptops hunched over all those years, and stretch those hamstrings, do plenty of yoga, and, you know, got to take care of your mind, body, spirit, the whole picture. You know, the old gray mare. It's still going. It's just got to get a little L5S1 fixed.
Word to the wise. Steve, thanks for joining us on Expanding Mind.
Yes, thank you guys for having me. It's a real honor and a pleasure.
Great, and we'll end the show with the second part of Daytime. And so from Maj and me to all you out there, keep your minds open.